There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Top debate, plenty of it over the course of the next 3 hours as well. We'll discuss everything from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's permanent appointment as Manchester United boss. We'll also look back on what has been a contentious week in the world of cricket. Ravi Ashwin, public enemy number one after that Mankading incident. We'll get the boys' thoughts on that as we go between now and 7 o'clock. Get your thoughts in as well. 4001, join the conversation. You can also pick up the phone. We often forget that on a Saturday afternoon. 04871 55 00. Share us your thoughts on all the big sporting stories. A lot of intrigue surrounding an awful lot of events today, but of course across the week as well. Let's welcome in my panel, my A-team today. I'll start with the man to my left. It is everyone's favourite Kiwi, because not many of us know any. It's Mark Archer. Good afternoon, Arch.
Afternoon, Christopher and Matt and listeners. Yeah, good afternoon. Great weather down at Brasties. It hasn't been best weather in Dubai over the last week or so, but we are happy that the sun is shining at Maidan, of course, for the Dubai World Cup. And, of course, the sun always shines at Brasties, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It is the place where the game is always on. 20-plus screens dotted around the venue. So much in the way of sport over the course of today. As I say, Premier League football, there's Indian Premier League in the cricket, there's the Bahrain Grand Prix as well, and as Archie has rightly pointed out, there is the Dubai World Cup. Matthew Fortune alongside us as well, the former deputy sports editor of Mail Online. A very good afternoon to you, Matthew.
And to you, Chris. Thanks for having me along, and let me just say that I'm absolutely delighted it's Premier League and not international weekend.
Indeed, I share those sentiments, no doubt about that. The early kickoff is Fulham against Manchester City. I'm not quite sure where to start, in all honesty, today, boys, because there's so much. From a footballing standpoint, Matt, I guess Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's appointment permanently is the biggest story in certainly English Premier League this past week. From a cricketing standpoint, Mark Archer, there really is only one place to start, and I know we're going back in time before we look forward. Ravi Ashwin, public enemy number one, Mankading. A lot of people listening this afternoon might think, what on earth is Mankading? Give us a chapter and verse. What is it?
Well, Mankading is something that you used to do at primary school when you played cricket, basically. And it's a form of dismissal. It's essentially when the bowler is coming up to bowl delivery to the batsman at the other end. He goes into his action. The backing up batsman is walking too far or taking too much ground. And the bowler whips the bails off and appeals and asks the umpire to make a decision. And technically, it's out. There are rules and etiquettes in the game of cricket, and there is a spirit of cricket we like to talk about. And Ravi Ashwin has provoked a lot of attention this week by a lot of people saying, well, what he did, it was the English batsman Joss Butler key stage of the match in one of the early IPL matches. And Ravi Ashwin came in to bowl. He basically feinted bowling the delivery. Joss Butler was backing up, as you're taught to do, walking down towards the striking end. And Ravi Ashwin's whipped the bails off and appealed, and Joss Butler was given out. So it has, by the letter of the law, he is given out. But under the spirit of the law, a lot of people have claimed that Ravi Ashwin should have warned. Official given him the batsman a warning, which is usually the what happens in terms of protocol or etiquette or in etiquette. The spirit of the game. You tell the batsman, look, batsman, you're backing up too far. If you continue to do so, I'm going to take the bails off and appeal, and you'll be given out. That's kind of the unwritten rule of Mankading. You give the batsman a warning, a verbal warning, by him stealing too much ground. And so that wasn't done in this case. And it's not the first incident that Ravi Ashwin has been involved in, because he was involved 5 or 6 years ago in another similar Mankading incident in an international match.
He certainly was.
I think it was against Sri Lanka.
And you're right to point out that it has caused an awful lot of mass hysteria, whether you are for or against this. I know Shane Warne was very vocal on social media, the Aussie legend, to say that this is not in keeping with the spirit of the game. Mitchell Johnson, Shane Warne's compatriot, very much of the opinion that Ravi Ashwin did nothing wrong. I'm going to pop you boys before I give you my opinion on this one. Matthew Fortune, Ravi Ashwin, yay or nay for his actions?
Well, for me, Chris, I appreciate that there's the culture of cricket suggests that there needs to be a warning, but fundamentally I don't really see anything wrong with it. To me, the idea of a batsman, you say, taking too much ground, where's the line? How far is too much ground? Yeah. Because you're kind of getting to that point where actually it's the batsman that's stealing an advantage, and to my mind, the batsman should have the integrity to start square on, you know, and then get ready to run once the ball has been released. I do understand that it's not setting the best example, but at the end of the day, this is a sports match, and we need to win. It's not cheating. He's not pretending that he's caught it and hasn't or anything like that. All he's doing is really kind of making a mockery of a batsman that's himself trying to steal an advantage. And for that reason, I'm certainly not as angry as Shane Warne was about it. I do understand that there is a degree of warning, and I kind of like that, but I do think that it's maybe making a mountain out of a molehill.
Law 41.16. There's an awful lot of laws when it comes to the game of cricket, but if the non-striker is out of his or her ground from the moment the ball comes into play to the instant when the bowler would normally have been expected to release the bowler is permitted to attempt to run him or her out. Whether the attempt is successful or not, the ball shall not count as one in the over. If the bowler fails in an attempt to run out the non-striker, the umpire shall call and signal dead ball as soon as possible. So that is the law. Where we're getting the little grey area, Archie, is the fact that this spirit of the game, spirit of cricket, for those tuning in today, that is something that's almost the gentlemanly code, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the spirit of cricket and you can talk about by the letter of the law, and this is similar to there's parts of sledging that's, you know, sledging isn't part of cricket of law. Also walking, if you hit the ball, the umpire has to give you out. Mm. So walking, they're saying walking is in the spirit. So if you nick it and you don't, and the umpire gives you not out, but you know you've hit it, then batsmen walk. You know, now you've got decision review systems, you've got third umpires, you've got all sorts of technology involved. Now, what I'll say about the incident, having looked at it on video, is Jos Buttler wasn't trying to steal a march on. He wasn't trying to run down the wicket for a quick single. At the point where Ravi Ashwin should have delivered the ball, he was actually still in his crease.
Yeah.
And then he basically feigned the motion of bowling. He'd taken almost a couple of centimetres outside, taking his first step down the wicket.
Yeah.
When he kind of looked at him and whipped the bails off. So for me, he wasn't overtly trying to steal a march. He wasn't trying to get an advantage by leaving early. It was Ravi Ashwin, on the other hand, almost deceiving him into moving early, you know, then take the bails off.
So where are you sitting with this? If Fortune is saying that nothing wrong with it, it's not in the rules, therefore if Ravi Ashwin can go to bed at night and sleep well, then more power to him. Where are you at with
Nothing wrong with what happened, but give him a warning. Give him a warning, and if he does it again, then nip him off, and then you've told him. Then the implication that you haven't done anything wrong, you haven't brought it back. Because you've met Ravi Ashwin, I think you've done an interview with him.
Yeah.
Lovely bloke, highly educated, but I mean, I think there comes a stage when I think, and the guys you talked about, Mitchell Johnson and Shane Warne, and a lot of people came to, you can go one step too far in trying to win, and they think he's taken one step too far, literally, in this incident. So that's the grey margin in there. You can argue for and against it. Let the lorries out. He's done, but I can see why it's become such a big issue.
Yeah, an awful lot of people, as I say, sharing their thoughts on this. Shane Warne very much against it. Mitchell Johnson and your good mate Dean Jones as well. He was popping up on social media to just trot out that law to say, and I think his exact words were, Law 41.16, as I touched on earlier, a batsman, a non-striker's end should not leave his ground until the bowler has released the ball, so out. Lesson, batsman, watch the bowler's release the ball.
Don't get Kiwi started on Dean Jones either.
I do think Archie's right to an extent that had Ashwin gone all the way through the complete bowling motion, yeah, and then stopped and then turned and did it, but what you see, his lead arm doesn't even come above his shoulder. He's not in that process. Butler is certainly taking a step forward, doing a bit of research. I see there's a great example of Chris Gayle from a few years ago who goes through it and actually makes a real song and dance of warning the batsman. And that is nice to see. But once again, I mean, it sounds silly, but there's so much money involved in winning and losing. And Butler's a great batsman. You get that opportunity because they're being a little bit sneaky. I mean, maybe it's a slight on my own character, but I think I'd probably take it, to be honest.
As I said to you, this is something you do at primary school when you're playing, you know, cricket with 8 and 9 year olds.
This is maybe why I haven't played cricket since primary school.
And this is the sort of thing you're taught as a kid to back up, and you're not taught about mancading and trying to make an incident. You're taught as a child playing cricket, you back up with the bowler, and this is the sort of thing you have at kids school when guys are backing up too far and they threaten to take the bails off and they go back in school dead ball and you bowl again. That's the sort of incident we're talking about. Surely IPL and international cricket should be above mancading.
Well, the MCC have said that this rule or law, depending on which way you want to call it, it's a law, is what it is. It's not a rule, it's a law. They want a review of it, that this needs to be cleared up because it's open to interpretation. Some individuals, in the case of Ravi Ashwin, will take advantage of the spirit of the game, spirit of the cricket, because he is that way inclined. Others will stick to it. So it definitely needs cleared up.
Yeah, the MCC quickly came out and actually said they didn't have a problem with it, and then they did a quicker U-turn, reversed their thing, saying, yes, having reviewed it again, they said it was against the spirit of the game, the MCC spirit, etc. So, yeah, even they're not sure. They make the rules, the laws.
But where does it stop? How far does is the batsman allowed to go down the wicket before you're thinking, okay, he hasn't gone too far, so therefore it would be inappropriate to warn it? I just think there's a very clear line there. It's the crease.
Yeah.
If the batsman is out of it, then he's gone too far, in my opinion.
If the bowler releases the ball when he's supposed to.
Yeah. I think there may well come a point where it's literally the batsman can't back up. The batsman's got to stay in his crease. The spirit of the game will take this out of the spirit of the game. If the bowler sees the batsman backing up, he or she is well within their rights to take the bails off. Let us know. Join the conversation on this 4001. No right or wrong answer. We just want a good argument today on the grill. So much to get through. As I say, Dubai World Cup is ongoing. All the fashionistas, all the better looking people than us three here are down there. We're manning the fort down here at Barasley. We're building up to the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It's Fulham against Manchester City. We'll get team news on that, and we will be popping up to Maidan Racecourse because our man Tom Ucker, he is down there. He is working on the Style Stakes. He will be wearing a pinstripe suit, I'm sure. We'll be catching up with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Grill. We're live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
To the show, myself, Chris McCarty, Matt Fortune and Mark Archer. We're with you through until 7. The last time, incidentally, that The Grill will be broadcasting from 4 until 7. The clocks spring forward. That's what I learnt yesterday. It was the fact that it springs forward. It springs, so it goes an hour forward, UK.
I wish everybody was here to see how proud Chris
genuinely
was. He's managed to work that out at age 33.
33 years to work it out, but I finally did it. Springs forward.
I was just looking forward to Chris rocking down here at 5 o'clock next week. You're missing the first hour of the show.
I finally realised that it springs forward in March, back in October. So it will be 3 until 6 next week. Let's get some live action. We will be down to Maidan in just a few moments. The 2019 Dubai World Cup, the richest day in horse racing, has begun. Tom Ockert standing by. We'll get an update from him. Let's start, if we can, with the IPL. There is an early match in the IPL. It's no shortage of talking points. It is the Kings 11 Punjab taking on the Mumbai Indians. Mark Archer?
Yeah, double header today in the IPL. The first match is coming live from Chandigarh. It's Kings 11 Punjab hosting Mumbai Indians. Mumbai Indians have just completed their 20 overs. 176 for 7 they've scored. Quentin de Kock, the South African opener, he has top scored with 60 for Mumbai. So Kings 11, when they start their innings, they'll be chasing 177 for victory. Late match is it starts at 6:30 UAE time in Delhi. It's the Delhi Capitals hosting the Calcutta Knight Riders. The Knight Riders undefeated so far, 2 from 2, 2 wins for the team from Calcutta. They'll be taking on Delhi 6:30. Of course, result from last night in the IPL, it was a victory for the Sunrisers Hyderabad against the Rajasthan Royals.
It certainly was. Pakistan-Australia as well. That's ongoing right here in the UAE. That series, we'll get Arch's thoughts on that as we go this evening. 4001 to get your say in on that man-caning incident involving Ravi Ashwin and Joss Butler a little earlier this week. Early kickoff in the Premier League. It's back. Club football is back. Rejoice. We won't talk about Scotland and their awful result against Kazakhstan, and they're not too pretty result against San Marino either. All of that is to the dustbin of history. It's all about club football. Premier League returns. Early kickoff, Matthew Fortune. It's Fulham against the table topper City.
You'd be hard pushed to find a more one-sided fixture across Europe this weekend, Chris. Quite the challenge for the home side at Craven Cottage. They're currently in 19th place, a full 13 points from safety. I think they're all but gone. I think their appointment of Scott Parker a few games ago was probably with an eye on the championship next season. The visitors, of course, Manchester City. Meanwhile, I've put them down in my notes here as champions elect. I'm sure we'll get to talk about that a little bit later on. They've won 11 of their last 12 games, and the other one was a penalty shootout victory anyway. So taking a look at the team, Fulham will start looking for their first win under Parker, but we'll have to do so without Alexander Mitrovic. He returned from international break with a slight niggle. Has been out of form really under the Englishman, but they'll have to do it without the Serb. But that doesn't mean they're not going for a punchy formation. According to the formation that's been submitted, Ryan Sessegnon will take a place through the middle, with Floyd Aiti and Ryan Barber either side of him. It's a 4-3-3. So they've got Timothy Fotu-Mensah, Callum Chambers, Cyrus Christie and Joe Bryan, and then a midfield three of Tom Kearney, Maxime Le Marchand and Andre Zambo Aguisa. For the champions, as I say, for the champions elect, in my eye, Pep Guardiola makes four changes from that. I've called it nervy, FA Cup win against Swansea. I think they were much the better side for much of the game, but of course needed to come back from 2-0 down. Those four changes see Alexander Zinchenko come in, Kevin De Bruyne, Sergio Aguero and Raheem Sterling. They replaced Fabian Delph, Riyad Mahrez and Leroy Sané and Gabby Jesus. And it's a 4-3-3 for them as well. So Zinchenko, Laporte, Otamendi and Kyle Walker, De Bruyne, Gundogan and David Silva in the middle, and then Sterling, Aguero and Bernardo Silva on the right of that three.
The double game week in fantasy football as well. It pays to have Sergio Aguero, at least I certainly hope it does, as triple captain, and that's exactly what I've got him as. Fulham today, and then in midweek it's home to Cardiff. If Sergio Aguero does not score 44 goals, then I will be shocked over the course of the next two matches. It is Fulham against City. You're saying they're champions elect, and I know what you're doing there, Matthew. What you're doing is you're jabbing the Liverpool fans in the ribs this afternoon. What makes you think City have got this done and dusted?
I just think a win today, Chris, and they go a point above Liverpool, having played the same amount of games. They just know what it takes, and ultimately, this Liverpool side, the players in it, the manager within it, aren't very well versed in getting teams over the line. We discussed this a few weeks ago on the grill. Jurgen Klopp's wretched record when it comes to the home straight of season, both in finals, I think it's 0-8 in finals. It's terrible record. And similarly, getting over the line in title winning seasons, Dortmund, yes, he won two, but he could have won three, threw big leads away. And for my money, just with a bigger squad, greater strength in depth, I think it's City's to lose.
I want to ask you boys, and we'll get to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as we go this afternoon as well. We'll hear from Pep and from Scotty Parker before the little segment is out. PFA Player of the Year. I hate to talk about this given the fact that what are we? We're only at the 30th of March. The season goes all the way through until mid-May, of course. But there will be a decision made long before the final ball of the season is kicked. Three men, I think, are standing head and shoulders above the rest right now from a PFA Player of the Year award standpoint. I think you've got Virgil van Dijk, Raheem Sterling, and I know some people would say that Sergio Aguero should, by virtue, a bit like it was a couple of years ago, a bit like the fact that he's not won one. I think N'Golo Kante didn't win, did he, with the Leicester season. He won it in his first season at Chelsea. He would go on and win it. A little bit like that with Aguero. Because he hasn't won one, people putting him in the mix this year. I'll come to you, Archie. Player of the Year thus far, 30th of March, I know. But if the voting was to happen tomorrow, who would get your vote?
I'm going to go with Virgil van Dijk. And I think the reason for him is he's had a great individual season, but his difference for Liverpool has made them the contender that they weren't previously. He single-handedly, and we talked about them last season with Mo Salah scoring 50 goals or whatever he scored last year, a ridiculous amount of goals. The difference for Liverpool this season is defence, and I think Virgil van Dijk is the man that's held that together, and he's been ultra-consistent. His standards are so high, so I think the man that's made the most difference for his team and been the best individual player is Virgil van Dijk. The reason why he might not get it is you don't often see defenders win this type of award. It's usually the guy that scores the most goals and makes and does it the other end, the offensive player. So that'd be a reason why he might not win it. But for me, Virgil van Dijk is the biggest difference that Liverpool are still in title contention this year and where they haven't been in the past.
Matthew Fortune, van Dijk, Sterling, another.
I don't want to disagree with Arch throughout the show. I just think it's incredibly difficult for a defender to stand out when they're not necessarily going to win a prize at the end of it. And if you look back through the history books, Chris said it there, John Terry, the last defender to win in 2005. Before that, anybody got a guess?
Ooh, Paul McGrath.
You amaze me sometimes, Chris.
Is it Paul McGrath?
It's Paul McGrath, yeah. For Aston Villa. And the year before that, Gary Pallister. So Pallister obviously won the title with United in 93. But Paul McGrath didn't. And I just think it's so difficult to stand out because defending is, while Van Dijk has been an excellent, excellent player and has really brought Liverpool forward, it's working as a unit. That's what defending is. It's working as a unit. It doesn't matter if you're the best defender in the world. If you've got a shambles around you, that's not going to make you stand out. And for that reason, I think that's why it most often goes to attacking players. I think N'Golo Kante, of course, a defensive midfielder. Yep. But it's because he'd won back-to-back titles, as he touched on. He didn't win it with Leicester. That went to Riyad Mahrez. They're more attacking. They're more eye-catching player. And for that reason, I think it's going to be Raheem Sterling.
Do you not think with Raheem Sterling, though, the issue that he plays in such a good team with, you know, so many, you know, you've got Sergio Aguero there, Kevin De Bruyne hasn't been the presence this season through injury. He's just got a wealth of talent that City's got. It's hard to give it to, and he has, whilst he's had a really good season, I get that, he hasn't been Mo Salah outstanding, if that makes a sense. Last year it was undisputable, undeniable, that Mo Salah did it, even though Liverpool weren't really in contention to win the title. So apart from that Champions League final performance. So that for me just makes, you know, a standout player. Look, you'd probably score a dozen goals for Man City up front.
Thanks, Arch. Much appreciated.
I've seen him play, Arch. Trust me, he's not that good. I'm not quite sure a dozen goals would be scored.
It's a perfectly fair point. I mean, the counterpoint to that, of course, Leroy Sané winning Young Player of the Year, was it last year, I believe?
Yeah, it was.
So it is possible to stand out, but you're absolutely right with such a wealth of talent, almost to my point about defending being the job of a unit, that Manchester City attacking three or six, really, sometimes the way they line up, it is part of a unit. So you're right, it'll be certainly interesting. I mean, it's great that there is a defender in the running, of course, and it does show the value of putting a lot of money, which it was on Liverpool, and a lot of people sniffing at a player that was coming from Southampton that had been at Celtic, of course, a big club, but not necessarily the highest level at that time. And it shows what an enormous value he's had for Liverpool.
I haven't seen the goal-scoring list. I know Raheem Sterling's either leading that or second.
He's double figures for assists, double figures for goals.
If Raheem Sterling isn't the leading goal scorer in the Premier League, say it's Harry Kane or say it's Sergio Aguero, do you still give it to Raheem Sterling?
Yeah, I do. I personally can see both sides of the argument, and I know Van Dijk is the bookmakers, the leading London bookmakers' favourite to win it because of what he has done. And I take your point, Mark Archer. He's been a Rolls Royce in there. He's been hailed as probably right now the best defender in world football. I know Manchester United past and present players would point out that you need to win something in order to be hailed and regarded as that. Sergio Ramos might have one or two things to say about that as well. I get all of that. I just think the evolution of Raheem Sterling, we're starting to see now a consistent footballer, and that in part comes down to Pep Guardiola, to Mikel Arteta, to the rest of the City coaching staff. But I think as well, a lot of praise on Raheem Sterling. He has come in for dogs abuse. We're not going to get into that, whether the rights and the wrongs of that, but his consistency, we saw the other night for England as well. Now, people might point out, well, wait a minute, it's Czech Republic, with the greatest of respects to Czech Republic and Montenegro, but he was the match winner again. He is evolving. He has slowly been coming. Forget Harry Kane. Raheem Sterling, for me, is now England's main man. Manchester City as well. Look across this season, the biggest games, Raheem Sterling is starting. You know, and that, I think, is testament to what he has done on the training ground, what he's doing in matches now. He's found a level, he's found a consistency, and I think, personally, I would lean towards giving the vote to Raheem Sterling.
The interesting other thing I was just going to add to that, we talked about, if I said that Raheem Sterling wasn't the leading goal scorer, if Liverpool win nothing at the end of the season, they finish second in the Premier League, they get knocked out of the Champions League and come away with nothing, do you still then give it the award? Does Virgil van Dijk still probably win the award?
Remember, Archie, the voting comes probably four or five weeks before the season.
Is this the players vote, or it's the journalists the
PFA is the players, so the players will get their vote. I think in actual fact it will be Virgil. I think Virgil, the column inches, the pundits back home have been falling over Virgil van Dijk. I think that's maybe only been the case in recent weeks for Raheem Sterling. You look at Raheem Sterling's stats for this season, 48 games played, 25 goals and 12 assists. That is a man who at the age of, what is he, 23, 24 is Raheem, who is finally finding peak form, and he is becoming an integral part of Pep Guardiola's Manchester City side. And when you've got Kevin De Bruyne in there, you've got Sergio Aguero, Bernardo Silva, who I'm a huge fan of, Leroy Sané. I mean, Sané's not getting a game right now due to the form of certainly Silva on the right-hand side, Raheem Sterling as well. Virgil van Dijk, as good as he's been, my vote on this, again, it's only my opinion, would go to Raheem Sterling. Get your thoughts into us on that one as well, on 4001, and maybe put forward someone else that we're not discussing. I think they're the two. Aguero, a bit of a distant third, and then the rest very much just making up the numbers. You've got another stat from the Fortune.
No, it wasn't a stat, Chris. I wanted to sort of take the conversation on, if you didn't mind, talking about the Young Player of the Year award. There's an interesting debate kicking around. You mentioned one of the players there, Bernardo Silva, who is eligible to be the Young Player of the Year by 4 days, and he's aged 24. And this came up recently. I think it's mad. If you look back at the list of players that have won this tournament, that won this particular title, they're in their kind of third, fourth season. I think Harry Kane a few years ago won it, and he'd already captained England at an international tournament. It's crazy. I think there should be just a little rejig of those awards, where you actually award kind of a breakthrough season, like they do in America in the NFL. Yeah. They give you the Rookie of the Year. So it's that first season where you've really started to make a real name for yourself. Arguably, you could have someone like N'Golo Kante at the time because he was new to the league. But it'd be really good to start rewarding players who, at the start of this season, you had no idea about. I think of the likes of Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Crystal Palace, for example, who has gone from being
somebody that nobody ever heard of and the £4 million man in fantasy league to get you in your team to being mooted for a Manchester United transfer.
What about Raul Jimenez, someone like that who's burst on a wonderful season?
And I'm thinking as well, Declan Rice. We'll put that one out there. Rookie of the year. Let's change it up a little bit. Rookie of the year, 4001. Let us know who would get your vote on that front as well. Stay tuned. It is The Grill. So much going on. We're down to Maidan when we come back. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It certainly does. Warm welcome back to the show. Myself, Chris McCarty, Mark Archer, Matt Fortune, Tom Urquhart down at the Maidan Racecourse as well. It is the richest day in all of horse racing. It is, of course, the Dubai World Cup. We'll get an update from he in just a moment or two. Let's get a quick update if we can. Early kickoff in the Premier League, it's Fulham against Manchester City.
Yeah, with 3 minutes gone, Chris, actually, it was Fulham that had the first sniff of goal. It was a Manchester City mistake. Maxime Marchand kind of, I mean, to call it a hoof, lumped the ball forward. Edison came racing out of his line and completely missed the ball. Luckily, there was no one there to capitalise on that, and City have soon got into their groove. They've had one corner, Bernardo Silva causing a bit of trouble down the right, but so far, after 3.5 minutes, it's 0-0.
It certainly is. We'll keep an eye on that early kickoff. Not that we're going to pay too much attention to the early kickoff in La Liga, with the greatest of respects to the sides that are competing in that one. I'm not sure there are many fans out here of Getafe and Leganes. If there are, 4001 we aim to please on this show. The IPL as well, the early start in this one today. It is the Kings 11 Punjab taking on the Mumbai Indians.
Yeah, late match in the IPL sees Delhi taking on Calcutta Knight Riders, but live action coming from Chandigarh. Mumbai Indians have compiled 176/7 in their 20 overs. Top scoring there for Mumbai was Quentin de Kock, the South African. He scored 60. The reply is underway. Kings 11 Punjab have faced 1.5 of their overs and they are currently 8 without loss. KL Rahul is 2 and the universe boss Chris Gayle is 5 not out. So the reply is just underway. They need 177 for victory. Kings 11 Punjab, I'll bring you all the wings, the wickets and runs as they come live from Chandigarh.
We've got a goal, I think. We've got a goal from Craven Cottage. Matthew Fortune.
We do indeed, Chris. I said City took a little bit of time to get into their groove, but it's taken them just 5 minutes to trouble the scorers. And it was the man we were talking about just a minute ago. In fact, not Raheem Sterling, the one who'll probably win PFA Young Player of the Year and not your fantasy football captain. It's Bernardo Silva that scored.
He's in my team, though.
But it's an assist for Aguero. We're just waiting for the replay to pop up. As I say, 5 minutes gone. It is a long, long afternoon ahead for Fulham.
It certainly is. 5 minutes on the clock. Fulham 0, Manchester City 1. I am delighted. Triple captain Aguero and Bernardo Silva also in my fantasy football team, a long way back from Fulham. They are down. They've made one or two questionable decisions across the campaign. I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but getting rid of Slavica Jukanovic when they did. Ranieri, I know it's easy for me to jump on board the bandwagon and say he was never the right man, but he never was. And now Scotty Parker, lamb to the slaughter.
No, these mistakes started in the summer, Chris. It was wholesale changes for a team that had got promoted off the back of a wonderful piece of momentum after Christmas in the Championship, knitting together some beautiful football, playing as a unit. And in the summer, I think they signed 13 players. They were the fourth biggest spenders in the Premier League. And any manager worth their salt is going to struggle to try and increase to get all of those players ticking and working. I think Jovanovic had maybe played different back four every time for the first 10, 11, 12 games, just did not know how to settle because you got big players on big contracts and he couldn't fit them in. And I think they were doomed from the start.
Yeah, it certainly were. I'm kind of with you on that front. Huddersfield, Fulham definitely down. I wonder who will join them. We'll get to that in a second. So that game is up and running. I want to get the thoughts of, let's hear from the managers ahead of this one. Pep Guardiola, pressure, well, what pressure? They're going for a quadruple, our Manchester City. They start the day 2 points behind Liverpool. Of course, they played a game less. This was Guardiola's thoughts ahead of that Fulham clash.
At the end, it's nice to leave that. We spoke about that with the team. So we are privileged to leave that situation, to be still in all competitions, in beginning in April, you know, to fight for the titles. It's an incredible experience. So normally I don't know how many teams in Premier League history in that position fighting for the four titles. I don't know how many was in that position. So were in that position. So that's nice. It's good. And I think they are fresh mentally in the legs and we're going to try it.
Let me ask you boys this one. Pep Guardiola, Manchester City, the quadruple. They've got the League Cup, they've got the Carabao Cup. They are favourites. You've said they're champions elect. In your opinion, Matt, they're into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They've got a pretty favourable tie. I don't want to be too harsh on Spurs, but you'd expect them over two legs to get the better of Spurs. And of course, they're in the Emirates FA Cup semi-finals with the greatest of respects. What have they got? Brighton, Watford and Wolves left in that competition. The quadruple, will they?
Do you know what, Chris? I'm going to say they're only going to get three, and that's because I'm an old romantic at heart, and I'm going to tell you that Wolves are going to win the FA Cup.
I'd love that. That'd be a cracking little story, that. So you're still expecting them to win the league. Are you fancy them for the Champions League?
I really do. I think it's a City-Barcelona. I mean, it just reeks of narrative, doesn't it? Pep Guardiola getting Manchester City's first Champions League pot by beating Barcelona in the final.
Don't say it. Mark Archer.
Yeah, but Barcelona get knocked out next round, though. So. Yeah,
of course. Sorry.
It's going to be the Manchester Derby.
I realise I got both of you. Goodness me.
It's Manchester Derby, isn't it? In the Champions League final,
even
Chris.
Even worse, that, if City do go on to win it and beat United in the final. But quadruple arch for you?
It's definitely a possibility, within the realms of possibility. Just because they've got so much strength of depth. I would have thought if they were skinny in certain positions, if they didn't have the squad that they had, that something's going to catch up with them at some stage in the next 2 months. But I just feel that they've got so much cover. They've had to deal with injuries throughout the whole season, but they've got so much quality, you know, proper quality to come in, where they could almost field two teams in the Premier League and both be sort of in around the top six, you would have thought, you know, if not winning it. So that's the big advantage that they have. And this is where the big difference with Liverpool this season is they're a bit skinny in a few positions. So for me, I think the Champions League is the one still. I still think one of the team over two legs in the Champions League still might get them, if things go well. But what's going to hinder them is the title race is still so close.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to concentrate on that. It's not as if they had a 10-point lead in the Championship, then he's got the privilege of resting and really rotating guys. But again, so much strength of depth. I think it's tough to see past that, but I think they'll get three or four.
Three or four. Wow, you're all three or four.
I'll say no, nay to the Champions League.
I hope that I've backed Liverpool from day one, so I think Liverpool will finally end their hoodoo and win the Premier League. I'm kind of with you. I think this could actually be their year. I know Pep Guardiola has been quick to talk it down, but if they keep some of their key players fit, and the crazy thing for me is City have looked so good this season, and the best player in the Premier League, for my money, Kevin De Bruyne, has had an in-and-out season. He's been quiet, he's been injured, and yet they're doing what they're doing. I mean, it's remarkable.
And they're also doing it without a left back of any real note, which is, considering a Pep Guardiola team, considering the importance of wing backs, especially in the formation that they play and really how football is played in general nowadays, doing that without someone there. But just looking at the players, they've rested, essentially. Sané out, Jesus out. You just bring there's so much depth in every
Mahrez.
Single, it does, exactly, it doesn't even, they can change that front
Defoe
three.
Defoe Silva, we don't even talk about anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, how can a player as wonderful as that not even be worthy of mention? It's crazy. And the fact that Fernandinho is not currently fully fit, and he's to come back in. So the fact that you're going to have one of the best holding midfielders arguably in the game coming back fresh, fit, with a big title running to go. I think they've got 15 games left if they are to win all four. I really do think it's a big possibility.
Yeah, it's quite frightening to say that. If you look at the team they've put out today, look at the bench. So you could have a team of Claudio Bravo in goals, Danilo at right back. You could have Stones and Company as your centre-halves. Benjamin Mendy to come in at left back. Your midfield could be Fernandinho, Phil Foden, Fabian Delph, with a front three of Mahrez, Sane and Gabriel Jesus. I mean, what a squad. That is the lead. If you are just joining us, it's 12 minutes on the clock at Craven Cottage. It is Fulham 0, Manchester City 1, the early kickoff in the English Premier League. So that's City, quadruple or not. Let us know your thoughts on that one. What about the big news from the other half of Manchester today, this week, gentlemen? It is, of course, the permanent appointment of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on a 3-year deal, rumoured to be getting paid just the chunk change of £7 million per year. Solskjaer, right man, long term. I know, Mark Archer, you and I have similar views on this. Now that you've had time to digest the news, happy?
I'm happy in the degree that I think he's done a wonderful job. I had a debate with myself just before the show, actually.
You had a debate with yourself? How did that go?
Well, I was actually with my mate Willie, but I was debating with myself the merits of this appointment.
With yourself.
And here's my take on it.
Who won?
No, I'm still sitting on the fence.
Of course you are. Yeah,
of course I am, after having that vigorous debate. So here's my thing about it. I think he's done a wonderful job in the time he's come in. But the bar was very low with Mourinho. Someone had to come in and it could only get better. So he's come in and he's done better. He's got the players playing the right style. He's got the culture back in there. The players are happy. They've all recommitted to contracts. And, you know, Rashford said he's going to sign and Martial signed. A lot of players didn't want to be there under Mourinho. And they were almost, and Pogba, you know, let's see what happens there. So he's done a wonderful job. My issue is the timing. Why wouldn't you, but he hasn't won anything yet. He hasn't actually achieved anything apart from the team playing a lot better and getting some results. I would have waited to the end of the season. I would have seen the body of work that's happened and still another, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months to go, and said, have you qualified for Champions League football? Let's understand if you have or not. Did you have a good run in the Champions League? Well, he's done that. So he's kind of ticked the box there. He's got past PSG. And then I would have looked at the other managers. Who else is available? Who's coming off contract? Who might get fired? Can we go and get a Pochettino? Yep. Evaluate it properly without the emotion of what he's done over the last 2 months. Take the emotion aside and make an informed decision. That's my issue with appointing Solskjaer now. My argument against myself was, okay, the thing is now they don't want to have who is going to be the manager hanging over them in the next 2 months. And that was what was hanging over them. Players needed to sign contracts. Players that they want to sign, they'll be speaking to them now. No player will be going to Manchester United not knowing who the manager is.
Yeah.
So to be able to make signings, to be able to make moves in the transfer market, he has to strengthen the team. You have to know who your manager is. That's my argument against myself about making the early appointment. And that you have to make a decision. You have to pull the trigger. So again, this, I'm arguing against myself here, but that's my
year
two,
and
my two thoughts.
Year and E for Solskjaer. Come on, year and E.
I'll go yay, because I'm a positive person. Okay, I'm half glass full. But right. I would have waited to the end of the season.
You're saying yay. One school of thought with that, and I take the point about potential transfer targets, Matthew. There is the other suggestion that Mauricio Pochettino, come on, Manchester United are a huge football club. They would have done their due diligence. Intermediaries would have spoken to Mauricio Pochettino's staff. And clearly, Poch has said, not for me. And Solskjaer is the only option, viable option. Agree with that?
No, I don't actually agree with that, Chris. I'll tell you what else I don't agree with. And again, three from three. And this one has been an easy one to disagree with you, Arch, on. I think it's absolutely crazy. You talk about transfers. What player is going to want to play for a manager that's been relegated from the Premier League and has got 7 or 8 seasons in the Norwegian top flight? There is absolutely no allure in going and playing for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yes, he's done well, but as Arch says, it was a pretty low bar from where it was before. But Manchester United need... Actually, the thing is, they don't need big, big players to come in. I think they've got the bones of a really, really good team there. And I'm not certainly going to go down the Paul Ince route of saying anybody could have done what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer done. And he has done well. And I think the way he managed the PSG tie was excellent and shows that there is tactical acumen there and it's more than just an arm around the shoulder. But for me, I see him out by Christmas.
That's bold.
And the reason I say that is, name one example where a caretaker manager has come in and had a rejuvenating effect, has been given the job full time, and then it's worked out. I'll give you the finest example, and you boys might wish that it works out this way. Roberto Di Matteo stepped into a Chelsea team that were on their knees in 2012?
Mm-hmm.
An absolute shambles. Andre Villas-Boas had led them down a completely irresponsible tactical approach. He came in, put an arm around the shoulder. They knew him. They liked him. He was the number two. And they won the Champions League. Gone by November. Because there's a massive, massive difference between being a manager of a football club that needs an arm around the shoulder and needs just a little bit of an injection of life, and a manager preparing for a season at arguably the biggest club in the world, to my mind, the biggest job in football outside of international football, to actually prepare for a season, to encourage players to come in, to massage egos, to attract the right sort of players. And I don't think a manager with the limited experience, regardless of what he did as a super sub and scoring goals in Champions League finals, he's just not up to the task. If he was really that good, somebody would have poached him from Norway a lot sooner.
That being said, and again, I'll play devil's advocate on this one, we have seen Zinedine Zidane, someone hugely respected in the dressing room, coming from Castilla, Real Madrid's B team, taking charge of a team of Galacticos, big personalities, showing tactical acumen, to use your expression, going on and having success. Why can't Solskjaer do the same? You're absolutely right to point out he got relegated with Cardiff City. I'd also point out that Sir Alex Ferguson didn't exactly start very well with East Stirling or with St Mirren before he got his big break at Aberdeen. It happened.
It sounds a lot like me that you just compared Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a player to Zinedine Zidane.
Good point.
And as a
That's
manager
a fair point.
To Sir Alex Ferguson. No, you're absolutely right, but I do think the dynamic of the dressing rooms that he is walking into is very, very different. For all of the posturing of some of the United players and for all the fact that it is a good squad, on paper it is no Real Madrid squad. And also the pedigree of Zinedine Zidane as a player. And it will be interesting to see now Zidane, actually, this is where he really cuts his mustard. I mean, he's played an absolute blinder taking the Real Madrid job, as he has done in this situation. But you're looking back at those 3 years and you cannot sniff at a manager that's won the Champions League 3 times in a row. It's great. Who's never not won the Champions League, which is just bizarre. But I do think they're two completely different dressing rooms, and I do think they're two different players and two different ex-professionals coming in at that stage.
So Solskjaer gone, you are of the belief Solskjaer gone by next December?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Or this December?
This December. I just think you look at, I mean, it's on a much lower scale. Craig Shakespeare comes in at Leicester City, saves them, gone again
right
pretty
then,
quickly.
I'm going to stop you right there. We'll ask our listeners on this one. Give me a caretaker. And I've got to rack my brains a little bit on this one as well. Even a caretaker that's done well, stuck around, and poo-pooed.
You look at even Kenny Dalglish did it. He came in at Liverpool. Was it to replace Roy Hodgson?
He did.
Won the League Cup. Fine. Bounce, bounce. Terrible last season. Sacked after finishing seventh or eighth position. It's so different going in and bringing everybody off rock bottom and giving them a bit of momentum when there's a decent core there already, to actually preparing for a season.
And that was my point. It's an emotional decision as opposed to a logical decision, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And he made it very hard for them with his success, though, for him not to give him the job. That was the thing. He's been that successful, but he's actually achieved nothing. And the worry is now that he will get found out when you actually have to coach this team, because he does have some talent there, but they weren't responding to Mourinho's coaching style and his man management. What the challenge for Solskjaer is now is he has to coach the team and play a style of football that A, satisfies the United fans, and he still has to get results at the same time. Because he has to look across the blue half of Manchester and look what Guardiola's doing there with the style of football they play and the results they're getting. Well, that's how he'll be judged.
4001, get involved in this conversation. I've got to take a little breather. We've got ahead, hopefully, Tom Ucker will pick up his bleeding phone and we'll get an update from the Dubai World Cup down at Maidan Racecourse. Get involved in so many discussion points across this week. Big stories in the world of sport. We're keeping an eye on the live sport as well. We've got a lot of guests going to be joining us after 5 o'clock as well. It's a regular voice who's going to be joining us, and he's brought his A-team down with us as well. All the details to come after 5. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
Yeah, the game is always on at Barasti. It certainly is, and the game is always on when it comes to the English Premier League. Early kickoff, it is Fulham against Manchester City. Midway through the first half, it is Fulham 0, Manchester City 1. Bernardo Silva with a wonderful finish after just 5 minutes to give City the lead. Indian Premier League ongoing as well, Mark Archer.
You caught me there writing down a rugby score, Chris. Yeah, there's
I like to throw in little curveballs every now and again.
Indeed. Double header today in the IPL. The late matches in Delhi. It's the Capitals, the newly named Capitals. They were the Daredevils for 10 years. Now they renamed them the Capitals. That match, they are hosting the Calcutta Knight Riders. The match underway is in Chandigarh. It's the Kings 11 Punjab hosting the Mumbai Indians. Mumbai Indians have batted first. They've scored in their 20 overs, 176 for 7. In reply, it's the Kings 11 Punjab off to a brisk start. 31 without loss after 4.3 of their 20 overs. It's the boss of the universe, yes, Chris Gayle himself, the West Indian, 22 not out after 13 deliveries. 2 sixes and 2 fours for the big hitting West Indian opening batsman. KL Rahul has chipped in with 9. So 36 without loss, Kings 11 Punjab chasing 177 for victory.
You may have noticed in the opening 55 minutes that the boss man, the dulcet tones of Tom Ucker, not on the show today, and there's good reason for that, because he is the best dressed man down at Maidan Racecourse. It is the richest day of horse racing anywhere. The Dubai World Cup 2019. Our man Tom Ucker is down there, and we can catch up with him now. Tommy, how are you, my man?
Yeah, very good indeed. Just taking a quick breather from the style stakes down here at Dubai World Cup. We break for the races themselves. And I can tell you that race number 3 has just come to a conclusion. That was the Altair Motors Thoroughbred, over 3,200 metres, which is around about 16 furlongs. That is the first of the turf races right there on the grass. And great news for one of the sort of local heroes, if you like. Charlie Appleby gets his first winner of Dubai World Cup Night 2019. Maybe more to come from Charlie and the rest of his team a little later on. Godolphin, therefore, with their first victory of the afternoon. Cross counter, number 9, galloping up to win the race from Ispellini, the other Charlie Appleby trained horse in this race. So a Godolphin 1-2 in race number 3, and an absolutely packed crowd down here. Sold out, Chris McCarthy, absolutely sold out. You cannot buy a ticket for love the money.
I tried, Tom, I tried, but that is why I'm at the rooftop of Barasti this year, and you're down there, my man. Cross counter, quick word on he as well, winner of the Melbourne Cup back in November. Charlie Appleby, Tom, what a 12 months. He won the Epsom Derby, he won for His Highness a first Melbourne Cup, and he's followed that up with victory today at the Dubai World Cup.
Indeed, he is, yeah, and he's continuing that great form, and that'll be great news for the local team down here ahead of the big one, which is scheduled for 9 o'clock. But as you rightly say, Charlie Appleby, who has left his mark, not just here in the UAE, but worldwide with the Godolphin colours. William Buick as well, nice considered ride from William Buick. And to get the 1-2 as well with Brett Doyle running in Ispellini into second position, it continues the good form that the boys and blues are having at the moment. But that's just the third of nine races on the card. A lot more to look forward to as the winners are brought into the winners' enclosure there. William Buick being interviewed as we speak at the moment. You can hear his dulcet tones behind us there. Great crowd, must say. No big performance this afternoon. But, of course, one to look forward to a little later on with Gwen Stefani, who's going to be taking the stage once the racing is done. Talking to Rupert Bell yesterday about the big one, the Dubai World Cup, and I know we'll talk more about that a little later on in proceedings, Chris McCarty, is the fact that he thinks this is the most open World Cup in recent history. Years gone by, we've had some big favourites that have come over, be it the International Raiders or, of course, the local team. But he thinks this year, just about any of the 13 that go to post for the World Cup could be winning it this year. So going to be watching on with interest ahead of that one. Before that, though, and I have a couple of prizes for nice hats and all.
Yeah, I've got to ask that, Tom, and you're absolutely right. The Dubai World Cup, Thunder Snow, looking to make a bit of history for Godolphin and win this race back-to-back. What threads are you sporting today, Tom? Because, of course, the fashionistas, you're one of those. They're out in force for the Dubai World Cup. Talk us through your attire, if you can, my man.
It's very unnatural for me because, yeah, right about this time, I should be in shorts. And a smelly old linen shirt up there on the rooftop of Barassi. I must say though, I might not be at Barassi with you at the moment, but I have popped in to say hi to Phil and the team at Barassi down here on course as well. I can rest assured that they are well. They're looking after proceedings down here at the moment. But me, no, I've just gone for a blue suit. You know me, Mr. Chris McCarty. Nothing too flash. I've not gone for the brain pipes this year either after the ill-considered opinions last year. I've gone from suit supplier, one of the official suppliers down here. Nice blue number with a white shirt. Can't go wrong. Why? Because I'm sweating. I'm sweating, Chris. I am sweating.
I bet you are, Tommy. Listen, we'll check in with you a little later today. Three races down, six to go. It is the Dubai World Cup. Enjoy it, Tommy. We'll catch up with you next hour.
Cheers, Chris.
That the voice there, the dulcet tones of Tom Acker, and he's gone for the suit. I am a bit envious now. I agreed to do the show today. I am a bit gutted that I'm not down there. Mark Archer, you're normally there. You not got any freebies this year?
I've been a regular for a decade down there, but I thought the weather was looking a bit dodgy today, yeah. And I thought I'd take a year off and come down and support you boys at Barasti. But it's the weather gods are smiling, and it's balmy.
It
balmy,
is.
Balmy, isn't it?
It's a beautiful evening. And what's your excuse, Matthew Fortune? No excuse at all. There we go. Sheepishly sinks into the bush down here. That's totally fine, Matthew. No excuse whatsoever. We've got a goal. The goal has saved you at Craven Cottage. There's been a second goal. Matthew Fortune.
Thanks for that, Chris. I was currently buried in my research just to see how many goals Fulham had given away by their own mistakes in the back line, because we've had it two from two today. Sergio Aguero has pounced on another Fulham mistake. I was actually preparing my notes to say that Fulham had looked all right since they've fallen behind in the last 20-odd minutes or so, knitting some nice passes together, making a few inroads out wide, but just in a flash, they seem to have just given themselves up. It's Cyrus Christie who's in the side, just dallies on the ball a little bit too long, tries to play it square to Callum Chambers, and it's an absolute disastrous pass. In nips Bernardo Silva, slips in Sergio Aguero, who just turns on the burners, beats three players just inside the area, and roofs one in, and it's 2-0.
2-0 City, game over. 5 o'clock, 1 hour down, two to go. Keep it locked right here, Dubai. I won a 3.8. You're listening to The Grill. And up next, we've got the A-team. Dale Gordon is with us, former Rangers Norwich coaching extraordinaire. He's off to the UK. He's got good reason for it. He's brought his squad along. We're talking to Dale next. Stay tuned.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.